A few days ago, Lorraine Galindo came to see me in the office. She's a 26-year-old woman, recently married, and she was thrilled to report a positive urine pregnancy test at home. I wanted to see her right away for a number of reasons, among them early diagnosis of threats to her pregnancy, such as tobacco, alcohol, certain medications, and also to get her started on prenatal vitamins if she wasn't already taking them. The extra folic acid in prenatal vitamins helps reduce the risk of neural tube defects and is ideally started several months before the onset of pregnancy. I also wanted to confirm, if possible, the viability and location of the pregnancy. That's important because roughly 1 in 4 pregnancies is destined to miscarry, and 2% of pregnancies are located in the wrong place, also known as an ectopic pregnancy. First, I confirmed the positive pregnancy test. Her last menstrual period was 7 weeks ago, and she had noticed the pregnancy symptoms of fatigue and occasional waves of nausea. This is her first pregnancy, and they had been trying for a pregnancy for 2 months before conceiving. She had been taking multivitamins for women with appropriate folic acid supplementation since she had initiated her efforts for a pregnancy. After examining her, I could feel that the uterus was enlarged and soft. We have an ultrasound machine in our office, so I turned it on and began scanning using the transvaginal probe. I was expecting to find a 7-week size sac measuring about 21 millimeters in diameter. The gestational sac normally grows about a millimeter a day for each day past the 4th week following her last menstrual period. I was also expecting to see a 7-millimeter fetus with a visible heartbeat. The fetus normally grows about a millimeter a day in crown rump length, starting at the 6th week from her last menstrual period. Instead of these normal findings, I found a 12-millimeter sac without anything inside it, no fetus and no rhythmic cardiac activity. I strongly suspected a missed abortion, one that is destined to occur but has not yet occurred. I finished the scan and then sat down to talk with her. I explained that I could see the pregnancy in the right place, but it was measuring smaller than I expected. I showed her the ultrasound images to help her better understand the size differences. I told her that about 1 in every 4 pregnancies will end up as a miscarriage and that I was suspicious that this pregnancy would be one of them. I explained that I was not 100% sure of this because based on a single ultrasound scan, occasionally there are exceptions for this discrepancy. For example, a pregnancy that is not as far along as we would think, based on the last menstrual period. To be 100% certain, I would need to take another look in about a week. If the pregnancy were normal, then in 1 week the 14-millimeter sac would grow to 21 millimeters and the absent fetus should grow to 7 millimeters and have a heartbeat. We arranged to have her return in a week with her husband. I then explained that about 2/3 of miscarriages occur because of chromosome abnormalities, and that is not something that can be fixed. Another 1/3 are associated with malformations of the placenta, and that cannot be changed. There are a small number, about 10% or less, of miscarriages that are caused by a variety of other problems, including virus infections and catastrophic maternal trauma, but that at this stage of pregnancy, if a miscarriage is in the works, there is nothing that can be done to salvage it. I wanted her to understand that she has no control over whether a miscarriage occurs or not. She cannot cause it, and she cannot prevent it. These are random occurrences that have no impact on the future. Every time a woman becomes pregnant, she will have about a 1 in 4 chance of having a miscarriage, even if she's had one before. I discussed the natural course of miscarriages, that she would continue to have pregnancy symptoms and a positive pregnancy test for a while, because those are caused by the placental tissue producing pregnancy hormone. Eventually, those symptoms will disappear and she'll begin to experience some vaginal bleeding and cramping. This usually is intermittent over the course of days to weeks, but eventually, the bleeding and cramping become about as intense as a bad menstrual period. Following this, she'll expel the pregnancy tissue. The tissue won't be recognizable to her, as usually a fetus never forms. After she passes the tissue, the bleeding usually stops and the cramping stops. She does need to be examined at that point, however, since sometimes some of the pregnancy tissue remains inside the uterus, provoking further bleeding and requiring minor surgery, a D&C, to complete. Most of the time, though, the pregnancy tissue passes uneventfully, normal menses resume in about a month, and she can try again for pregnancy, again with a 1 in 4 chance for miscarriage. An alternative to awaiting spontaneous abortion is to perform minor surgery, a D&C, to surgically remove the pregnancy. The disadvantage to this approach is that it requires surgery and anesthesia and the small risks associated with them. The advantage is the quick resolution of an emotionally draining problem for the woman with a predictable end. For example, some of my patients with small children at home do not want to run the risk of being called away in the middle of the night to go to the hospital to deal with a miscarriage. These women often prefer to schedule a D&C at a time when they can set up childcare arrangements. When she returns with her husband next week, I don't know what the scan will say, but usually it shows slight growth of the sac, like a couple of millimeters, but not normal growth, and usually there is no visible fetus, even though it should have grown 7 millimeters, and there's no heartbeat.